Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob, and we're reading today from The Scarlet Threads. Today we wrap up part three, which has been about how the Babylonian movement got protested against, how people started coming out of it. And then we've traced the movement of Babylon across the ocean into our own country, America, to see what it did here and what it tried to do. Let's talk today about slavery. Let's talk about Douglas and Davis and Pius the Ninth. Lincoln's position on slavery is classic American history. Everybody knows that. What about Rome's? We talked about that in reference to the Jews and others who were the serfs of the Dark Ages. Slavery was a part of Babylonian ways of thinking from its earliest days. Christopher Columbus, a true Romanist, when he first saw a Native American tribe, he wrote in his journal about how useful these people would be as servants. It was part of the mentality. I don't mean to be derogatory here. I'm just stating known facts. On the other side of the great Lincoln-Douglas debates that you've surely heard about regarding slavery was Stephen Douglas. His wife was Roman Catholic, if that means anything. And then in the book Doctrines of the Jesuits by a guy named Gurry, G-U-R-Y, on page 71, we're told that, quote, slavery does not really constitute a crime before any law, divine or human. When one thinks of the state of degradation in which the lords of Africa live, the slave trade may be considered as a providential act. Oh, my, really? Don't link this to the NAACP or to descendants of John Newman, the author of Amazing Grace, whom God saved from a life of degradation, which included the trading of human lives for profit. We're all aware that God takes the most horrendous of actions and uses them for his good. That is God's prerogative. But we must never whitewash the ugliness of the human spirit that created that action. This is man's depravity, and it's not just the white man that's involved in slavery. You can check Candace Owen, who speaks in our own day, and as she is an African-American herself, who talks of black slave owners in the past and in our own day. Slavery is across the board an evil thing, and every race has done it. Jefferson Davis, who's been given the presidency now of the Confederate Union, middle of the 19th century, right here, when the southern states break from the northern union. Jefferson Davis is another piece of this puzzle. Is he a Roman Catholic? Absolutely not. But a memoir of Davis, published by his wife after his death, reads like this. Quote, Mr. Davis's early education had always inclined in the Roman Catholics. And then Davis himself speaks, quote, the Kentucky Catholic school called St. Thomas College, when I was there, was connected with the church. The priests were Dominicans. They held large property, productive fields, slaves, flour mills, flocks and herds. As an association, they were rich. Individually, they were vowed to poverty and self-abnegation. They were diligent in the care, both spiritual and material, of their parishioners' wants. When I entered the school, a large majority of the boys belonged to the Roman Catholic Church. After a short time, I was the only Protestant boy remaining, and also the smallest boy in the school. But from whatever reason, the priests were particularly kind to me. Now, today, I can't say that without thinking bad thoughts. Okay, I'm just reading here, and it's never intimated by this man, but oh my, why are priests kind to little boys? But anyway, Father Wallace, afterwards Bishop of Nashville, treated me with the fondness of a near relative. Well, Davis's pro-Catholic attitude led to even stronger ties during his presidency. The following is a letter from him addressed to the reigning Pope Pius IX. Now listen, this is Jefferson Davis, president of that Confederate Union, writing to the Pope, September 25, 1863, very venerable sovereign pontiff. The letters you have written to the clergy of New Orleans and New York have been committed to me, and I have read with emotion the deep grief therein expressed for the ruin and devastation caused by our war, which is now being waged against the states and the people who have selected me as their president, and your orders to your clergy to exhort the people to peace and charity. I am deeply sensible of the Christian charity which has impelled you to this reiterated appeal to the clergy. It is for this reason I feel it my duty to express personally and in the name of the Confederate States our gratitude for such sentiments of Christian good feeling and love, and to assure Your Holiness that the people threatened even on their own hearts with the most cruel oppression and terrible carnage is desirous, as it is always has been, to see the end of this impious war, that we have ever addressed prayers to heaven for that issue which Your Holiness now desires, that we desire none of our enemies' possessions, that we merely fight to resist the devastation of our country and the shedding of our best blood, and to force them to let us live in peace under the protection of our own institutions, read slavery, and under our laws, which not only ensure to everyone the enjoyment of his temporal rights, read slavery, but also the free exercise of his religion. I pray Your Holiness to accept on the part of myself and the people of the Confederate States our sincere thanks for the efforts in favor of peace. May the Lord preserve the days of Your Holiness and keep you under His divine protection. Jefferson Davis. Did the Pope just file this letter somewhere? Oh, no. He wrote right back. Illustrious and honorable President, salutation. We have just received with all suitable welcome the persons sent by you to place in our hands your letter, dated the 25th of September last. Not slight was the pleasure we experienced when we learned from those persons and the letter with what feelings of joy and gratitude, illustrious and honorable President, as soon as you were informed of our letters to our venerable brother, John, Archbishop of New York, and John, Archbishop of New Orleans, dated the 18th of October last year, and in which we have with all our strength exerted and exhorted those venerable brothers that in their episcopal piety and solicitude they should endeavor with the most ardent zeal and in our name to bring about the end of that fatal civil war which has broken out in those countries in order that the American people may obtain peace and concord and dwell charitably together. Notice he calls them those countries, not this country. He's recognizing Jefferson Davis and his people as a separate country. Reading on, it is particularly agreeable to us to see that you, illustrious and honorable President, and your people were animated with the same desires of peace and tranquility which we have in our letters inculcated upon our venerable brothers. May it please God at the same time to make other people of America and their rulers reflecting seriously how terrible is civil war and what calamities it engenders. Listen to the inspirations of a calmer spirit and adopt resolutely the part of peace. Well, that would be good for Mr. Davis himself to do, don't you think? Reading on, as for us, we shall not cease to offer up the most fervent prayers to God Almighty, that He may pour upon all its people of America the spirit of peace and charity, that he will stop the great evils which afflict them. We at the same time beseech the God of pity to shed abroad upon you the light of his grace and attach you to us by a perfect friendship. Given at Rome, at St. Peter's, the third day of December, 1863, of our pontificate, 18. Pius the Ninth, curiouser and curiouser, like Alice in Wonderland, said, were you ever taught, did you ever hear, that the South's president was a personal friend of the Pope? Be assured that the British government, in an ultimatum to the same Davis, did not call him president, nor illustrious, not even honorable. They refer to his new responsibility as the so-called Confederate States. Nor did Mr. Lincoln call him president, of course. It leads us even further down this entangled side path from which we've got to retreat soon. But is it possible that a pro-Roman South would be advantageous to a pope, even then trying to put Mexico back in his pocket? A block of Catholic power reaching from South America, through Central America, through Mexico, through Texas, on up to the Virginias, and someday up to Maine, by way of Baltimore, of course. Surely they had to be thinking thoughts like that somewhere. Some of the Catholic elite were surely thinking like that, maybe more than a few. And we must avoid trying to sound sensational. We must likewise keep far from the undocumentable. But we must, in fact, learn to say, I really don't know on a host of issues. But again, let me remind myself and my readers and my listeners what I have set out to describe. Her name is Babylon. She is the mother of all abominations. In her is found the blood of all who are slain on earth. And if her daughters are not outright offspring, we can know that they are at least adopted for her own purposes. Satan takes other forms and has other projects going on the planet. But before it's all over, all human roads do indeed lead to Rome, as we have said. All roads lead to Rome all these years. We love that. But it's true. And I mean Babylon. Whatever form Babylon takes, you know I'm not just centering on Roman Catholicism, although it seems to have taken the keys for now to that kingdom, not the Lord's. This concludes part 3. As we plod further into the 19th century and halfway through the 20th in part 4, we're going to trace the Babylonian connection through two world wars. It will surprise you. We're going to discover how both Hitler and Mussolini were politically tied to Vatican City. We'll discuss communism and papal attitudes toward the West in our own day and more. Please stay tuned, as they say. Do stay tuned. Thank you so much for being here. Next time we get together, a well-deserved, a long-deserved break for those who need to catch up a little bit, for those who just don't want to talk about this for a little while, and that's okay, I understand. Let's go to our friend Mr. Spurgeon. I have found a book that he wrote. It's a small, small book. Don't panic here, but a very small book that will take several days to get through, about the Bible. Very refreshing change, I think, as we go back to the other side of the Christian thing, the biblical foundations for the church. Let's talk about just the Bible for a few days, okay? And then we'll get to part 4, and part 5 will end the history. Part 6, we'll talk about my own connections to Rome. And part 7, we'll talk about some Protestant threads, lest you think I'm totally blind to what's going on among us, and has been for some time. Thank you so much for being here. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun. Lord willing, we'll talk again real soon. Bye-bye.